coming in on our territory, you know.
Fortunately, we only have, you know, one or two occasions. Otherwise, we'd be done.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good thing. That's a tough one to compete against.
Yeah, but you know, folks can come back and watch us later. You know, they can watch the recording or listen later. So, mm-hmm. But if you're joining us instead of him, you know, which I you know, we're flattered, but we understand if you're not.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully, one day we'll be as well known. I guess, right?
Yeah, for good reasons, right?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. Well, you want it's famous or infamous, right?
Right.
we'll take the fame.
Right. So speaking of infamous, Mr. Chauvin is you asked me a couple days ago, could the charges be upgraded against him? Mm-hmm. And the answer was yes. And we now see that Minnesota has upgraded his charges from third degree murder to second degree.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I want to ask you, I mean, we can get into the legality in a second, but I definitely still agree with my original thought that this doesn't qualify as first degree murder. And they've taken the step to move it up to second degree murder, but not first degree murder. So I want to ask you, just setting legality aside for a second, and whether it fits the legal framework, because we can talk about that in a minute. Do you think that's a response? The upgrade charge is a response to the protests.
Yeah, you know, that's funny because I had talked to a few people, even here in the house, and a couple of really, really conservative people that I work with, who, believe it or not, have opinions that I actually, you know, mean something to me, actually carry a little bit of weight with me. And we're all looking at this the same way. What is striking, and the only thing that I said was, you know, if they were doing this because of the protests, if they were doing this to appease people, why not just go for first degree? You know, you might as well just shoot for the moon. If it's something that you can't prove anyhow or don't think you can prove, why not just give it, you know, get everybody what they want, because you know you can't, you won't be able to deliver anyhow. So just go ahead and go for first degree, you know, they're still holding on to the manslaughter charge. So right. why not just go for that and, you know, appease everybody? But they didn't. They went for the second degree one, which makes me think they know a little something about something.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the prosecutor who's Larry Ellison, I think most people remember Larry Ellison. You know, he's been in the news and been politically active, and he was a criminal defense attorney for a long time. He helped needy folks for a while, and now he's an elected official as a prosecutor. And he basically said what we said last week, which is there's just not evidence for a first degree charge. Basically, you know, there's not enough evidence of premeditation or any evidence of premeditation. And there's no, you know, deliberation over killing him. There's nothing to indicate that deliberating killing was done here. So, you know, it's an egregious act. Somebody's life was taken because of the direct affirmative actions of Chauvin. And he probably could have at some point shifted his weight or stopped, as you talked about before. And this is kind of something I want to get into with the other guys being charged. But so the fact that he didn't stop after he had the guy under control and continued to inflict harm on him after the guy was indicating, after Mr. Floyd was indicating that he was having difficulties with breathing, et cetera, and he was bleeding out of his nose. Maybe that's why he had enough to say second at this point in time. Maybe there's other evidence, but he talks about the links in the evidence have to be strong at every level. And I can tell you, this is another thing, and I'm going to end it right here. But as far as this discussion on the second degree murder, back when Freddie Gray was killed and the prosecutor was outraged at the police force in Baltimore, rightly so. She charged a bunch of them with first degree murder. And she charged a lot of them very heavily in their charging. And they were all acquitted, of course. And people at the beginning who were very social activist minded and social activist workers said they were concerned with the charges because they felt that they were overcharged. And it sent the wrong message. And I contrast that with what we're talking about right now. And you made a great point that the person who's doing this knows a little something about something. And he's been on the other side of it. So he knows that when he's defending a case, where is he going to hit the chinks in the armor? Where is he going to go for to take that case down? So he doesn't want to overcharge and leave room for the eventual defense attorney to take the chinks in the armor down. So I think you're right. He knows a little something about something.
Yeah, this guy isn't Marshall Clark, right? This guy's been around. He's been through these things. And for everybody listening, if you don't know who Marshall Clark is, she was one of the prosecutors in the O.J. Simpson trial. This guy's been around, and you can tell by his presser today, even if you knew nothing about him, if you never heard this guy's name before in your life, if you watch that presser, if you get on YouTube and look at pieces of the presser or even the whole thing, you will be 100% convinced that this is not this guy's first rodeo. He's been around. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. There is a definite edge to him. And if he moved it up, Frank, if it was almost anybody else, I would be giving it I'd be looking at it a lot more closely, or maybe not closely. I would be questioning it a lot more. How's that? I would be questioning the motives a lot more. But this guy's he's about as good as you're going to get. And if he's telling, if he's going for second degree, I got to assume he knows what he's doing. He's not just doing this to shut people up.
No, I think that's right. And I think that your point about why not just go for the first degree, because if it was totally in response to the fervor, to the outrage, and without thinking about what's going to happen in the future of this, that would be the play. But I think he's moving very carefully here. He's moving with the thought of getting a conviction. He knows also that this one case isn't going to heal the nation, but he knows that messing it up could further damage the nation. So
right. So he's going to be pretty careful, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about the pace in which this is going? From somebody on the outside looking in, I'm thinking this thing's moving pretty quick. So I'm curious what you think.
You know, in comparison to a lot of cases that we've seen, it's moving somewhat quickly, especially with the charging of the other officers. But then also we're in a society now where, you know, video is king, right? We have the video. We have a lot of information about this case. They probably have the dispatch call. They have the witness in the store that they talked to. They have everything lined up. There's not a lot that they have to track down. It's all kind of self-contained. And it's one of these ones that's, you've got a neat enough package that, you know, let me contrast it again with Freddie Gray. Freddie Gray showed up in police custody. Go back and watch the videos again. Please do. Go watch the Freddie Gray videos. He's being dragged on the sidewalk to a police van. You hear him yelling and screaming, and his legs are kind of limp. Okay, watch that video. And then he gets in the police van, and then you don't see much anymore after that. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't see anything after that, and you don't hear anything. In this case, we see and hear everything. Okay, you hear bystanders crying out to have the guy stop. You hear Mr. Floyd crying out for his mother, saying that he can't breathe and he's not feeling well. You don't hear that with Freddie Gray. So we speculated what happened while he was in police custody, meaning Freddie Gray. You don't have to speculate in this case. We also have the autopsy. We have the cause of death in Mr. Floyd's case. So yes, it's quick, but I think it's not unreasonably quick.
Yeah. But I had a few folks tell me that the toxicology report is saying that he was jacked up on something and whatnot.
Yeah.
First of all, I didn't believe it, and I didn't look. I just the source of who told me this stuff. Well, I trust him. I'm not so eager or so quick to trust his sources, if that makes any sense.
Right.
To you. They're
no, I get it.
You know, they're very, very biased sources. And I didn't research it to see if that was true or not. But
do police encounter people that are using drugs and are on drugs or under the influence of drugs regularly?
You're reading my mind. You're reading my mind. Right? Yeah, you're reading my mind. My response was going to be, so what?
Right.
So what? I will make the argument that that kind of furthers the case that these guys should have been even more careful with what they were doing, because they should have been able to recognize the guys, the state of the subject that they were taking into custody. So there's even a bigger burden on them. But, you know, I just know what it's like to take somebody out and thump them. that's about as much as I know. But I do know that the guys that I should say the people that I have had to deal with who were under the influence of one thing or another, you absolutely treat differently than you do somebody who, as far as you can tell, is sober as a judge. You know, you do.
Yeah.
So hopefully these guys, I'm very confident in how this thing's going to play out. It's just simply because of the person who's pressing the charges and all of that. To continue with the national embarrassment, you remember what our fearless leader did as far as just moving people out and gassing people and whatnot in order for a photo op. But before that photo op, he had a real quick, maybe 10-minute presser. I don't even think it was that long. A couple of paragraphs, which is probably all he could remember. And he had talked about invoking something that is referred to as the Insurrection Act.
Right.
Where he's claiming the authority to basically bring troops into a state, pick any state you want, one of the 50. I would assume it also means our territories as well. Can you kind of explain to everybody what exactly that is and what it means and where his authority actually lies?
Yeah, I mean, it's something from basically, the Insurrection Act is from 1807. So we're talking about something that's been around for, you know, 200 years. It is pretty broad in the sense that it allows a president to basically deploy the United States military. There are some provisions within the Insurrection Act that allow governors of states and state authorities to ask the president to invoke it if they feel that the United States government, which is also state governments, is being attacked. But it can be deployed for civil disobedience, civil insurrection, or, you know, basically times like... or where there's a revolution, you know, so you can, as a president, you can ask the military to go put down or control these riots, if that's what they're being characterized as. So the question is not whether he can do it. To me, the question is whether he should do it. And that's a question that the people who are afraid, and I understand why they're afraid, are worried because he has this authority. It's like everything that it's like everything we've encountered with President Trump. We always thought there was checks and balances. We always thought there was some limit to his power. We always thought there was limit to the president's power. We always thought that we didn't have this monarchy in our country. Well, there's enough loopholes, basically, that provide most executive authority within the presidency pretty much unchecked power. Because unless there is a unified body willing to stand up to him, like the Senate, and it has to be the Senate. Basically, the House has to be enough, you know, in unison to bring charges, and the Senate has to be unified enough to find him guilty. If you don't have those things, which is very hard to do, given the numbers you need, he's basically got unchecked power. So, and the same thing is with this, okay? And I'll go back to just a little anecdote. People always think, well, we're not a monarchy. We're not like the England and everything else like that. But, you know, in our country, we prevented the everyday citizen from suing the government for a very long time. And you still can't sue the government or sue the king. That's what basically they are. Unless very certain exceptions are met. They have to be these very specific exceptions that are met to allow you to sue the government. So the government can do whatever they want, harm people, and basically not be sued over. Because we live in this type of society. People don't realize that. And the same is true with this. If he wants to do it, he can do it. He can call this whatever he wants to call it and send in the troops. Okay? That may not make people happy. That may make people scared. And it should make people scared. But is it the right move? And I'm not talking about, you know, for us to say, oh, is this the right move? Because we're liberals and we're progressives and blah, 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 blah. That we wouldn't want to see this happen. I'm talking about from the party standpoint, the GOP party, the country itself sustaining our democracy going forward, and Trump himself. Is it the right move? No, because like we talked about yesterday, violence begets violence. Who's in the military? They're United States citizens. At the end of the day, they may be ordered to do things, but at some point in time, those orders are going to feel wrong. Okay? And then what do?
I guess another question I have for you, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Do governors have any say over this? Do they have any influence over what he can do? Because it seems to me that that's a big overreach from the federal government.
Yeah. They can ask for him to invoke it, which would have been interesting if Gretchen Whitmer had asked him to do that when those yahoos went into the Capitol building with AR-15s, right?
Mm-hmm.
What would he have done?
Well, you know what he would have done.
Right.
Yeah.
So they can ask for it, but can they stop him? Yeah, I don't think they can stop him.
That's scary.
Yeah.
Right, that's really, really scary. So if he decided he was going to send the troops into Philadelphia.
Right.
Wolf couldn't do a damn thing about it.
No. I mean, look at, if he wants to say on November, if he wants to say on November 1st, and I know that's a few days before the election, but let's not say he does it 24 hours before the election. He says on November 1st, things were too unsafe in the streets. I'm calling in the military. We're going to lock everything down. We're going to postpone the election because I'm invoking the Insurrection Act, and we're postponing everything. What's to stop him from doing it?
Well, that's why we have you on here.
Yeah.
I can just tell you how to build the bridge that he's going to drive over. I find that incredibly disturbing and rather scary, and it is a reflection not only of the character of the occupant of the current occupant of the White House, but also a reflection of the character of the former occupants of the White House, and how something like this has really never either been addressed or was never determined to be something that a president would actually try to do.
Right.
Right. That's scary.
It is scary. Let me get into a little detail, just real very briefly, because I don't want to just leave it as my anecdote. Okay. I don't want to just leave it as my like colloquial saying he can do whatever he wants to do. Governors can ask him to come in and he can say, yeah, I'm going to send in the troops because you've asked me to, because you've asked for that. He can then send them in without them asking if he believes federal law is being obstructed. Okay. So if he believes federal law is being obstructed, he can declare a proclamation and say something like, you rioters, you protesters must disperse this area. If you don't disperse the area, I'm going to send in the troops. And then he can say in his own interpretation, they didn't sufficiently disperse in the time that I set forth. And then people could try to stop him and say that he didn't do it appropriately. But how has that worked so far in anything?
It hasn't worked worth a shit.
Right.
Yeah, you're not making me feel any better, Frank.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to do that. I want to give you a dose of truth. I can't sit here and just, you know, sugarcoat mm-hmm. it.
I know. No, I appreciate it. I do. It just doesn't make me feel any better. And I'll tell you why. We have mentioned the character, right? And for the longest time on our show, whether it be, you know, the video portion that we've started or way back when we were doing just the audio one, we always talk about the character of somebody or the character of a person. Our kids have a tendency to take after us, our parents, right? Or mm-hmm. the kids are a reflection of their parents, mostly because it's genetic, but there's also the nature versus nurture type argument. Right. So Junior, Donnie Jr., the next brain surgeon in the country, gets on Twitter and he reposts a tweet from Evropa, Evropa, claiming to be an Antifa affiliate. And the post reads, tonight's the night, comrades. Tonight we say, fuck the city. F star star K, the city. At least get all the letters. I mean, come on. And we move into the residential areas, the White Hoods, and we take what's ours. Now that sounds like a really serious call to arms, isn't it? Turns out that's a white nationalist group posing as Antifa. And Junior went ahead and retweeted it. On the surface, you can make the argument, well, Junior is an idiot. Okay? I will make the argument that that's the best thing you can say. Because in order for Junior to have retweeted that, he had to see it. He had to find it. He either went out and looked for it, which I'm telling you right now is giving this clown far too much credit, or it's already in his feed and he just reposted what he saw. First of all, what are your thoughts about Twitter actually taking that group down? Second of all, do you think they would have done it if the rocket scientist, you know, the all-star over here would have, wouldn't have done anything and never would have brought the attention to it. And third, why hasn't his account been taken down yet? Since he's more than willing to promote it.
Yeah. I mean, I think they did the right thing by taking it down because clearly there's no real relevance to that tweet. As you read it, I'm thinking, is there anything that the value of it provides any kind of value whatsoever other than making threats and plans to cause harm or violence to a part of society. So, and whatever the psyops of it is, that's really all you can boil it down to. So there's no value to it other than that. So I agree with them taking it down. No, I mean, there's a lot of tweets that don't have value, but it also
brings, yeah, like most of mine.
Well, mine too, but at least we're not inciting violence. Okay.
Oh, that's true.
We're not inciting violence. So, I could see like saying, let's leave something up there if they're telling people to organize and protest. But if you're saying, let's go out and visit these particular neighborhoods and take what's ours, there's a little room for interpretation there to say what they're trying to do. So the other thing, as far as why haven't they taken his whole account down? That's a great question. I don't know if they are trying to play nice with the president, if they're trying to, walk a fine line by saying we don't stifle. Because look, if they did, it would buy into this narrative that, that the president and other Republicans and conservatives have been talking about their voices being stifled. So they can always say, look, we appropriately censor tweets that call for violence, but we didn't take your whole account down. So maybe that's why. That's my best guess. And would they have taken this Europa tweet down and taken them off the format had Donnie Jr. not reposted it? It's a great question. I mean, I see a lot of folks tweeting about being shadow banned or being banned or for a temporarily period of time suspended. And I see things about particular tweets being, suspended. I've seen in feeds this tweet not available. I've run across that many times. I think that Twitter is fairly active in trying to root those things out. Why does it take them so long sometimes? I don't know. But I think they're fairly active, regardless of who's retweeting it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with how much attention a particular tweet or a particular user is getting, right? I mean, if it's, hey, I'm gonna walk outside my front porch and shoot everybody on the street, and this guy has, 8 followers and one person retweets it, Twitter's never going to look for it until way after the fact, right? And that's right. After somebody points out that, hey, it was on Twitter, then they'll go. But you get the type of numbers that the All-Star has, then come on. Yeah, that's going to draw everybody's attention.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm not too critical with Twitter. There's just so much data there that they have to kind of go through that I don't know if they could write algorithms that would actually, because it's not like Facebook, right? Where it Facebook, the pace of Facebook, as far as posts and data transfer, other than like pictures or shit like that, is not nearly as quick as Twitter is, right? Yeah. Twitter's short. What is it? 100 or 170 characters or whatever the hell it is. Yeah. Well, they just upped it to whatever. It's very quick. It's almost rapid fire, right?
Yeah.
So it would be very, very difficult to flag these things or pay any kind of attention to these things immediately, right? As soon as they're tweeted, it would be a very, very difficult. I honestly don't think the capability is there. I don't even think it's a matter of the desire. I don't think the capability is there to do that because, boy, that's asking a whole lot when you're talking about that much content.
It is.
I really have a big problem with somebody in that position, and his idiot old man's the same way, who actually follow these things. You would think that it would be a no-brainer that if you are in that position, you're in the president's position, that they shouldn't be capable of following anybody. It should be a one-way street. It's just what they post. Especially if it's an official account. It's the White House. They shouldn't be following anybody.
Right.
Right? Now, if you want to have your personal one, the real Donald Trump, that thing is dead until you're no longer in office. Then you can do whatever the hell you want. You would think it would be something as simple as that. Because everything that guy says, even if he snores in his sleep, is public record. There's nothing private about it. So he shouldn't be following people because that's an endorsement.
Right.
Right. It's ridiculous that they're even allowed to have two-way communication like that. But Frank, I think that's a losing argument for another time.
Well, but let's revisit upon where this has taken him, because yes, he has gotten away with it and they've let him do that. But if you look at what we talked about last week, and I think it's amazing to me. This was posted on our Discord last night and maybe this morning about the Indiana vote turnout in the Republican primary. Mm-hmm. So remember we talked last week about decency, common sense, and the touch of the common person with the common people, and how Trump very much lacks that. And he's exposed himself not only on Twitter with this, but on TV throughout this COVID crisis. So people who maybe weren't on Twitter to see all this, which we did see from the beginning, because we are active Twitter users.
We are.
He's paying a price, a dear price for it. Last night in Indiana, there was something like 40,000 Republican registered voters in the primary that voted for a candidate named Bill Weld, who was no longer in the presidential primary. Those were clear protest votes against Trump. These are Republicans who went out and voted for a person who's no longer even a viable candidate. Boy, does that tell you something?
Yeah, it really should. It really should. Here's the thing, though, Frank. I don't know if he's actually exposed to these things or if he just ignores them. You know, that's the part I don't get. Does he have so many people around him now, so many ass kissers, that they just don't allow this type of information to infiltrate and get to him? Or does he see that and he figures, well, that can't be right because Fox Entertainment isn't reporting it, so it can't be true?
Could be either one of those.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What I do know is you never had that same dynamic with Obama, right? There was no filter there.
No, and I'll ask you this. If you look at a battle that's ahead, no matter how you look at it, it's a competition. Let's at least call it that. There's a competition that's broken between Biden and Trump. And if you're getting ready for this competition, don't you want all the information? Don't you want all the good, bad, and every piece of information you can get unfiltered?
Well, yeah, you would. Yeah, you would. You would want to know everything, even the shit you don't like, because... Right. You know, knowledge is power, right? It's ammunition for you. Even the shit that you don't like, you got to know where the game's being played if you want to play.
Yeah.
Speaking of game players, best segue I could do, Frank. I'm sorry. You know, Pennsylvania wasn't the only place that had their primaries yesterday. Iowa did too.
Yeah.
You may have heard of one of the biggest racists in the country, Stephen King, Representative Stephen King.
Yeah.
Yeah, guess what?
He lost the Republican primary.
He lost, brother. He lost. He lost to Randy Feenstra, Feenstra, who led King by 48% to 34% with, at the time of the writing in Vice, with 43% of the precincts reporting. So the other precincts couldn't have had too many people in them. Wasn't he a big Trumper? Wasn't he a red hat?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you look at these numbers, right, 48% to 34%, his numbers are just over 3 out of 10. and you're the incumbent in your own primary, that's a statement. That's a huge statement.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to get your opinion on that. But second of all, follow it up with, this seems to be a continuing trend as far as some of these old racist fuckers getting kicked out. We saw it in the midterms. Do you think this is yet another shot across the bow to the Republican Party that this way that you're doing stuff is finished? We no longer want to hear it anymore. Because it was this guy's own party that rejected him. It wasn't even a general. It was a primary.
Yeah, man. I really think that this is, I mean, and you're talking about Iowa, you know, Indiana. Iowa is not Indiana in terms of, Indiana is very red. Okay. Mm-hmm. Iowa, it's red, but it's more like purple, right? It's got a lot of blue in it. But Steve King's district, you know, he won his district easily for many years. Mm-hmm. And that's who voted him out. This is big, man. This is big. So, you know, it's just like the governor of Kentucky being a Democrat now. It's like what happened in Virginia. Remember when they had those special elections last year in Virginia? It's like what happened in 2018 in the big general elections, the midterm elections. It should be really sending this message very loud and clear to the Republican people who have given in to not only the Tea Party, but to the MAGA Party, and thought that they're hitching their wagon to that star. And they're saying, we're so afraid of them that we're not going to buck them because we'll lose if we buck them. Well, guess what? You lost in a big way because you supported them and you didn't stop them, and you're going to lose. And I'll say this. I think they've lost the country for the next 5 election cycles. I think that they will not win. They will not win back control of anything, barring some kind of craziness with Trump, with cheating and stealing the election. Something like that. But barring that, and even after 2024, barring that, they will not control anything. And that's why they're rushing so hard right now to fill these federal bench seats, because they know they'll never get a chance again to do that.
Yep. Yep. You're absolutely right. We had talked, Frank, and even in our Discord group, in our Discord channel, I said something along the lines of, the tide's turning, right? You're starting to see people finally have enough. Whenever you hit your wagon to this guy who's on a downward spiral, right? And he is, right? I mean, it's at this point, he's literally at the top of the commode, and it's starting to make its way down. And believe me when I tell you, I'm not complaining at all. For me, it didn't happen. It hasn't happened quick enough. I have to think that there are Republicans in our federal government, whether they be in the House or the Senate, who are up for re-election this year, who are looking at this and saying, oh my God, what am I going to do? Because if I stay with this guy, there's a good chance I'm going to lose, because this Steve King was primaried. So there's yet another shot across the bow. But if I go against this clown, then he's going to try to going to cut my legs like he's trying to do with Sessions, right? He's trying to kneecap him. And they have to figure out which one is the lesser of the two evils. Okay, because you have to figure out which one of those is going to be the one you're going to take the hit, and then you have to go against the Democrat later, right? So you have to mitigate how popular they're going to be and still try to keep yourself afloat. I don't think there's enough money or enough ads or enough anything to counter that. And I should have started that statement by saying the only thing they can do is just run ads constantly, right? Just pepper people with stuff. but I don't think they can generate enough money. Maybe more so on the Senate side than on the House side, because the House side, you know, the elections on the House side, representatives is a lot smaller, so the money is going to be a lot less than on a statewide thing. If you were in one of their shoes, and trust me, I mean, I know you wouldn't be, but let's just play stupid and say you are. How do you navigate this?
Well, again, you know, if they want my deep dive advice, you get a hold of me. You can get a hold of me at fan12198@gmail.com. And then, you know, we'll talk. You got to pay. but I'll tell you my very thumbnail. I'll tell you my thumbnail sketch. First of all, what have you done for your district, or what have you done for your state? You got to highlight that. You got to talk about anything and everything you've done for the constituents that you represent. And that's really the focus. That's the beginning and the end, and nothing else in between. Because when somebody else wants to say something about Trump, you say, okay, Trump's in Washington, D.C. I'm here in this district in Nebraska. I'm here in this district in Wisconsin, whatever it is. Okay. That's where I am. That's where I am. And this is what I've done. And this is what I'll continue to do for you. The president is there. I can't control what the president does. Okay. Now, how far does that take you in a time where the country is roiling right now? It doesn't take you very far, but it's better than any other option you've got. And you've got to hope that over the next few months, you can find a way, whether that's through, and I don't want to reveal too much, but I'll say, well, you've got possibly governors in your state that might be allies. You've got other politicians in your state that might be allies. You've got business leaders in your state, community leaders in your state that might be allies. And you have to really align yourself with those folks. And you have to cut yourself off from the idiot that's residing at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, to the extent that you can do that. But the real time to do anything about that, now the House of Representatives folks, I think they've got a better shot at it. But the Senate people, I think the Senate people are dead in the water. They're dead in the water.
Yeah, that I completely agree with that. I think they are too. You don't have the amount of money or maybe the resources that if you're running in the Senate. However, you do have the boots on the ground, right? You do have the local. It's far more concentrated, and I think you're right. You have a far, far better chance if you're a Republican in the House, based on the scenario that I set out, than you do in the Senate. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Before we go any further, FaZe Rich John over on Mixer, thank you very much for the follow. We truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Thank you so much. Do you remember yesterday? All right. I'm just kidding. But yesterday we were talking about a lot of the social networks, right? We talked about Facebook quite a bit, and how Zuckerberg's really shitting the bed on how he's handling this whole Trump thing. And we kind of compared him to Twitter, right? And how they're handling things. We just made a great example of how Twitter's handling things with the All-Star Sun. And I had said at one point yesterday about how we have such a change in generations, how generally speaking, very stereotypically speaking, our generation, the Gen Xers, are pretty much the last generation on Facebook, right? It seems like it's us and older, and our children, and even for some of us, our grandchildren, or on things more like Instagram and Snapchat and whatnot. And I had said yesterday that for the most part, whenever my son is communicating with his friends, it's almost always on Snapchat, right? Today, according to Business Insider, and here's the headline I want to read to you. And I don't think people are going to appreciate just how big this is. Because my son's generation, my son, your daughters, right? They're voting. They're at that age, yeah. Right? They're voting. The headline is from Business Insider: Snapchat will stop promoting President Trump's account in their Discover portion. And the quote is, "We will not amplify voices who incite racial violence and injustice."
How about that? Isn't that how it should be done? An example of how it should be done.
Let's take that and compare it or contrast it to Zuckerberg over on Facebook, right? Where Snap said, and trust me, I don't know who owns Snap. I know they're publicly traded, right? Snap's public trade. I think you had mentioned that yesterday.
It's publicly traded, yep.
So they'd have a CEO, not an owner, right? Or well, they could, but
yeah, I believe so.
It's more than likely it's a CEO. This is a platform who, excuse me for saying, doesn't give a fuck, right? They don't care. They're like, no, this is against what we stand for. This is against our terms of service. And guess what? You're out. As long as you're doing this garbage, you have no place on our platform. And so in our presidential election, on one very big, very important social media platform, the only person who's on there now is Biden. And I know he's on there because I follow him on it, right? He's in my Discover portion of Snapchat. So Biden's on there. Trump isn't. That's enormous. That's absolutely enormous, because a very large portion of our population who is eligible to vote and is voting for the first time in a presidential election, and for a lot of these kids, it may be the first time they're voting ever, they're only seeing, in this case, the Democratic feed, right? They're only seeing it's going to sound like a dirty word, but the propaganda of the Democratic side. They're not going to see the Republican because he pretty much excluded himself from an entire platform. What do you think, Frank? This is big.
I think it's huge. I think it's tremendous. It's an example of really how to handle things. Look, if folks want their voice heard on something, i.e. if Trump or a Republican wants their voice heard on Snapchat, then it's simple. You look at the terms of use and you say to your advisors, are we complying with this terms of use? And if you comply with the terms of use, your voice is going to be heard. If you don't, then you're not. And that's what Snapchat's saying. We're not going to put you on because you violate, essentially, in those words that they said, you're violating our terms of use. Simple. Period. End of story. And I think that sends a great message. It's a great message to the kids to look at it and say, well, they told us we can't say these things. We can't do these things. They're even telling the president he can't say and do those things.
Right.
That's America, baby. That's really America right there.
And what it did was it showed these kids that you are just as important as he is.
That's right.
Yeah. That is enormous. And I don't think this, and you know, Frank, maybe we're goofy, but I don't think that this is getting nearly enough attention. You know, well, yes, my wife, you know, yes, talk to my mother. She'll tell you I'm the goofier of the two. Well, I may not be the goofier of the two of us. It depends on what day it is. But this is not going to receive nearly the attention that it should. I don't think. And you know, maybe we look at it a little differently, Frank, because we both have kids that are on these platforms. I mean, I'm assuming you have one that's on Snap. I don't know, but
she is.
Yeah. They all are, right? I mean, all the kids are, this is what the kids do, right? God, do I sound old? I feel so old. But I mean, like even a couple of his friends, like whenever I would be coordinating things with his friends, like for his birthday or whatever, that I don't want him to know about, right? I'm talking to his friends on Snap. I'm like, dude, party for Nick on, you know, whatever for his birthday, you know, let everybody know. And they get back to me. They're like, okay, cool. You know, something like that. So even, you know, a 52-year-old is talking to his, that generation on that platform.
You're meeting them where they are.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Because you have no other way of doing it. Right. You're not going to get on. I'm telling you right now, his friends, especially the ones, not his acquaintances as much as his friends. I could be on Facebook 24/7 and I'll never reach them because they're not on it.
Right.
This is really big. And I don't think it gets nearly the attention it should, because, and let's not forget, out of everybody way back 6-8 months ago who was running for president, Biden was the oldest. Well, maybe Bernie was older, but if Biden wasn't the oldest, he was the second oldest, right? And he now has a portion of people that are pushing
his campaign.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You know, like I said, I just said I'm old. his campaign. He has a portion of his campaign that is dedicated to the 18 through 30 year olds, roughly. And like I said, this guy's got to be, if he's older than Trump.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I see it as a big deal. I really do.
I do too. And I think that it'll have a ripple effect through other social media. I think other social media will take, you know, pay attention. I think Twitter has been trending that way. See how I said trending on Twitter? But
look at that.
I think Twitter has been. So I think Twitter has been, you know, they're going in that direction. And now that Snapchat has done this, Twitter is going to start to probably say, well, gee, we've been dipping our toe in that pool. Should we dive in? And we'll see. We'll see whether they do that or not. In addition to that, I don't think Facebook will do a damn thing, because we talked about it yesterday. Will they do anything? That depends on which way the winds blow and how hard they blow. That's where that goes. But I think that, you know, other Business Insider is a heavyweight when it comes to money moves, when it comes to companies' integrity and reporting about that. So believe me, these other companies are reading that. Believe me, they've read it.
They're and don't forget, they're competing against each other, right? So yeah, they're going to pay attention to what each other's doing.
Yep.
Do you think Zuckerberg, and we touched on it a bit yesterday, do you think Zuck is playing the game and basically in Trump's palm because it's in his best financial interest? Or do you think that's who he is? He's a right wing, well, based on how his platform does things, a right wing nutcase.
I think he's just playing in that sandbox because it brings him the most wealth right now. And it's like, how do I extricate myself from this sandbox while still making the kind of money that I'm making and keeping my platform at the level that it's at right now? And I think that's, to me, that's the more probable thing. And I don't see enough of him to think that he has strong enough tendencies to be a right-wing guy. And I don't mean strong in strength. I just mean, like, he seems so wishy-washy. He seems
a little,
like,
weasel is the,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I just don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see him being a progressive, a Democrat or a Republican. I just think he's like, well, let me see which way should I go today, because I need to keep things moving in my company. And if I pull this out from under this leg here, I don't know how my company's going to sustain its numbers. So I think it's really, that's all it's about. To me, that's my guess.
So it's basically a money thing for him. You think it's not, it's not a personal view of things. It's just, it's as the some of the best movies ever said was, it's strictly business.
I think so.
Not a bad question. Well, to follow up on that, and it by was no means based on your answer, I was going to ask you this anyhow. What do you think would happen if tomorrow, whenever everybody who's on that platform gets on their Facebook machine, because for a lot of people, that's all it is now. That's all a PC is now, is a Facebook machine, right? It's the only reason they have cables to watch Fox Entertainment, and the only reason they have a PC is to get on Facebook. As soon as they get on Facebook, the very first thing they see is a notice that says this platform will no longer allow any political posts from anybody, period. no ads, no posts, no anything. And we're not saying no left, no right. We're saying if it is deemed a political post, it's getting censored or taken down. What do you think happens?
I think that people will adapt. I think that the people that are the generation that use that and want to continue to use it, they'll bitch and moan and say something about it. But realistically, if they're so ingrained with that, like you said, those folks are, that they just have, they have a PC just to be on Facebook. I don't think they'll leave Facebook over that. I think they would complain, but realistically, if they want to look at their friend's high school yearbook picture, or they want to look at the recipe for banana bread, like you said, or they want to see my dogs in my yard, you know, and comment on that, they don't care if there's a political ad or not.
No, I agree with you. The cat pictures, I think, to most people, are far more important than the political posts, right?
Yeah.
So let me ask you a really stupid question. Why don't they just do that?
Because I think Congress, I think that Zuckerberg hears, he's kind of in an echo chamber, right? I think he hears it from Congress. And they're talking about the ad revenue and things like that with him. And, you know, the folks that are on Facebook aren't necessarily making the decisions to advertise, but he may be fearful about regulation that would come down on him if he doesn't allow the ads, or if he censors the ads in some ways. So he may be fearful about that. He may not understand that the power is truly in what he created in the people that attend, because the ad sellers are going to want to be there because the people are there. He understands that in principle, but he might be fearful of what Congress could do to him with regulation.
Yeah. And I think that's, at the end of the day, that's the whole driving anything is, is the regulation, you know, thing that's being held over his head. I'll tell you something else. I am going to go out on a limb and say that if our federal government goes Democrat, right? The House is already Democrat. That's not going to change with this election. It's just the number, the amount may change, but it's still going to be, Nancy Pelosi is not giving up her gavel anytime soon. If the presidency goes to Joe Biden and the Democrats control the Senate, I think you're going to see a big change at Facebook. I think you're going to see it become far more progressive. I think you're going to see it become far more, far more liberal, because Zuck now has to appeal to, let's be very stereotypic. He has to appeal to AOC now.
Yeah.
And that's going to be fun to watch. Okay, let's leave it at that's going to be fun to watch. But that's my prediction. What do you think?
Oh, I agree with it 100%. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of smart people out there that are computer, I hate the word computer savvy, because it's not even that anymore. But they're tech driven. They understand data. Data is a huge driver, and they'll understand how to create policy. And understand how to create regulation that basically prevents the PSYOPs campaigns that Russia ran on Facebook so successfully. Because it all started, I mean, it's so wild to hear the people that are brainwashed by this. They love Putin. There's people that don't even know Putin. They don't know what Putin's all about. They love Putin because they think that he hates black people. He doesn't really even hate black people. He just doesn't. In Russia, it's about the foreigners that are from South Ossetia and the Stan countries, because they're afraid of them. Okay, that's to them the minorities that they're afraid of. Okay, and he tries to keep them out and keep them oppressed. But they see it as license for them to hate black people in America because of the comments that he's made. And this has been a PSYOPs campaign that's been run on Facebook. And it keeps going deeper and deeper. And he supports Trump and he supports, you know, the GOP. and they all get sucked into these talking points. And what I'm getting at is, I think there's a lot of smart people who are data driven and are tech analysts who can say, how can we write regulation that prevents this kind of psyops operation from successfully taking root?
Yeah, I agree. You know what, Frank? That's a great place to stop. Why don't we call it a day right there? Give people something to think about. We could actually end it on a positive note, but a note that makes people think.
I'm going to give people a smile about it. You see those two dogs sleeping on the porch there?
Look at those two knuckleheads sitting there.
That's my Facebook post. Look at that face. Look at that face.
That's a great pair there, Frank. That's a great pair.
All right. That's a great spot to end it.
That's perfect. Everybody, thank you for joining us. If you like what you see, like what you hear, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You can do so for as little as $1 a month. If you're on a Mixer, where we just got a new follower on Mixer, if you're on a Twitch, and if you want to throw us a tip, we would really appreciate it. And even if you don't, that's okay. Just join us again tomorrow. That means more to us than any of the money does. Believe me, it really does. So until then, we'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully Lou's with us. Hopefully he doesn't, die on the golf course, getting a golf ball to his head, or God knows, it's Lou. Who knows? But in any case, thank you everybody for joining us. And we will see you tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel. Until then, goodbye, good luck, and God bless. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Yep.